Welcome. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All right. Beautiful day. Beautiful sunny day here in Ireland. I'll tell you, when it's sunny in Ireland, it's absolutely one of the most beautiful countries in the world. When it's not, 60-40. Still pretty beautiful. Today I'm going to talk about, who is this Krishna? Who is this Krishna? Anyway, who is this person? In the past 40 years, in the Western world, there was an awakening of spiritual consciousness, as many of you know. We call it the 60s. Most important thing that happened in the 60s was there was an awakening of spiritual consciousness. And it still extends to today. Not as intensely as it took place back then, but nonetheless, it extends into the present. And many people were on a spiritual path of some sort from that time. I was fortunate enough to find myself in California, where I was not born and raised, because that was really where it was all happening. That was the place. That was the hot spot, the birthplace, seemingly. And within the past, 20 years from there, and then the New Age movement came in, and et cetera. In the West, all this stuff is old hat in India. It's been going on for millennia. There's nothing new there, but it was new in the West. And a lot of people got it in their heads from Mayavad philosophy, from monism, that I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Well, we're all divine. We're all spirit, we're all spiritual beings, we're all souls, no question. But are we fully on the level of God? Are you God in his complete manifestation? No. The way it's explained by our founder Acharya Bhaktivedanta Swami is we are parts and parcels of God. Yes, we have the divine qualities. We have most of the divine qualities that you'll find in the Godhead, but we don't have them in the full measure that God does. If you take a drop of ocean water, you will find in that drop of ocean water, H2O, two atoms of hydrogen and one of oxygen, right? But you'll find it in a huge ocean that would be compared to God. We are like a drop. You'll still find the same proportion of hydrogen and oxygen, but minute portion. It became very popular in the West, especially over North America, where I was for most of my life, to declare that so-and-so, that person over there, that's an avatar. A person's an avatar. Really? Huh. Did you know? No, I didn't know. I had no idea. Yeah, they got special markings on their butt. That's an avatar. That's God over there. Is it mentioned in the Shastra? Is it mentioned in the Vedas? Is he predicted somewhere? Can you find the prediction? The foretelling of his appearance? What? Well, that's what all his followers say. Oh, well then, must be true. If we have a consensus, no, it's not true. It's not true. It's not that simple. Others will say, if there is a God, show him to me. Let him appear to me right now. I want to see him. Step up, my friend. I want to see you. Otherwise, I'm not going to believe. If I don't see him, I don't believe it. So the quote is, Atakshri Krishna Namadi Nabhavid Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhe Hijiva Dao Swayam Evas Puratyadaha. We cannot see God with material senses. Why? Because God is purely spiritual. You mean God cannot appear to you right now in front of you if he wants to? Of course, he can. But he doesn't as a rule, as many of us have noticed. Not as a rule. Because we have to gain some qualification. We have to be worthy of that. And with that is required some purification, some time spent purifying the self. And what's recommended in this verse from Rupa Goswami is that it begins with the chanting of the names. Jiva Dao, beginning with the tongue. Actually, it says Jiva, the tongue. How do we begin with the tongue? By chanting. By talking about God. By eating prasadam. The tongue is a very, very powerful organ. Very powerful. It can lift you up or bring you down. You can talk too much and get yourself in big trouble. You can eat too much and get yourself in big trouble. Right? So the tongue begins, it says, Jiva Adao, beginning with the tongue. And then we go to the rest of the senses. So by chanting and spiritualizing yourself, chanting what? Chanting mantra, the names of God. You can spiritualize yourself in this age, Kali Yuga, very quickly, much more quickly. When they say very quickly, they don't mean like in a year or two, usually, to be honest. You know, you got to think about a lifetime. A lifetime. Why an entire... It seems like a long time. And I'm a busy guy. Yeah, I know, but do you realize how many thousands of lifetimes you've been contaminating yourself and conditioning yourself under the influences of the three modes of material nature, of the material energy? It's very, very difficult to get out from under that. We need a helping hand. There are... So now let's talk about who is this Krishna, now that I've said a couple things. How does God fit into all this? There are four major Vaishnava sampradayas that have been there since the creation of the world, material world. A sampradaya is a line, a descending line. You could call it an organization, but it's much more than that. It's a philosophical, what would you call it?
Lineage,
thank you. That's it. It's a philosophical lineage. It's a belief system. Now, all four of these sampradayas are Vaishnava sampradayas, which means they accept Vishnu as God, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnava comes from the word Vishnu, with Sanskrit vridhi applied. So these four Vaishnava sampradayas are the Brahma Madhva sampradaya. That's the one that we follow here. And that was the originator, or the founder of that would be Lord Brahma, the creator of all the diversity in the material world, in creation. Then there is the Sri Sampradaya, very famous in India, particularly in South India. The Sri Sampradaya, Sri is who? Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. So the Sri Sampradaya is also there, and everybody knows Sri Sampradaya Tilak. That's Ramanuja, no? Ramanuja was the Acharya. It's the two white lines with the red in the middle. You see that all over India, especially in the south. They got the trees with the Tilak on. So then we have the Kumara Sampradaya, the four Kumaras. In fact, I think I talked about them last time I was here. Four Kumaras were the sons of Brahma, the creator. And these four boys came into being, and Brahma says, now you go off, and we'll get you wives, and you'll start multiplying and populating the place meaning the universe. And the boys, they didn't take to that. They weren't thusly inclined. They were very detached and renounced and very spiritual in nature, so they said, no thanks, Dad. Actually, Brahma got cross with them for a while. Anyway, they went off and started their own Sampradaya. And that's the Kumara Sampradaya. And the foremost proponent of the Kumara Sampradaya is Nimbarka Acharya. And then the fourth one is the Rudra Sampradaya. Who's our friend Rudra? Shiva. So Shiva has his own Sampradaya because Shiva is considered to be the number one devotee of Vishnu. And the foremost proponent of the Rudra Sampradaya is Vishnu Swami. So there you have it, four Sampradayas. Now, in many of these Sampradayas, I'm not sure if it's all of them except ours, I think it is, the belief is that Vishnu is the origin of the Godhead. And from Vishnu come all avatars, all empowered incarnations of God that come down to Earth, not just Earth, various other planets, to Yada Yadahi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata, to whenever there's a rise in irreligion and a decline in real Dharma. When we say religion, we don't mean a particular religion. We mean more a path of virtue, truth, and morality, ethics. That's what we mean by religion. That's religion. So when that declines, sometimes God sends an avatar or an empowered being, you know, which is also a form of an avatar too, but so we believe here that Krishna himself is the source. In some of the sampradayas, they will tell you that Vishnu is the source and Krishna is one of the avatars. Here we have been instructed by Prabhupada that Krishna is the source and Vishnu is one of the avatars. Or we could say it differently. Krishna and Vishnu are essentially the same person. Vishnu is the forearm form of the Godhead. Very formal. To approach him, it's like going into the king's court. And there's formal behavior, there's protocol. Just like you would think when you're approaching God. You know, we bow down. Well, you bow down for Krishna too. But Krishna is less formal. He likes to have fun and play around and dance and play music and run around the forest. So he's your best bud. He's your best pal. He's one of the lads. That's Krishna. He's the two-armed form, the guy with the flute. Very attractive character. Very attractive. What does his name mean? Attractive. What does Vishnu's name mean? All-pervading. All-pervading, attractive. All-pervading, attractive. Take attractive. Anyway, it's the same person, essentially. So, a couple of proofs, if I may, from Shastra. sadhu, shastra, guru. That's what we go on here. We don't go on a group of people that say that guy over there is an avatar. We don't do that. If he's an avatar, then that means very, very evolved, realized sages, sadhus, would have written about him or talked about him. That means he will be in the shastra. The shastra is the Vedic scriptures that have been extant since the time of creation. And you will argue there was nothing written down at the time of creation. And I will say, yes, you are right. Because they didn't write anything down back in those days. It was all oral reception. They only started writing stuff down when we got real dull. And we couldn't remember it and commit it to memory having heard it one time. Uh-oh. Grab some palm leaves. We got to start writing stuff down. They're not retaining anymore, these people. You know, you can't even retain a 10-digit phone number. Wait. Let me. What's your phone number again? These days. So, Ishvara, this is from Brahma Sanhita. Brahma spoke this. And he says, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. That's the Sanskrit. So he says, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's God, the Supreme Person. His body is made of Sat Chit Ananda. Vigraha means his body. He has a body. Is it a physical body? Earth, water, fire, air, ether? No. It's pure spirit. And it's made up Sat, eternity. Chit, full consciousness. Knows everything. Always. Ananda, bliss. Happiness. If you're not fully happy, you as human beings, if you're not fully happy and delighted and joyful all the time, you're getting ripped off. Sorry. You're getting cheated. You're getting the short end of the stick. Because that is your birthright, my friends. Ananda. If you don't have it, it's probably because you're hanging out in the material world. Can't you have it here? Yeah, but not focusing on material things, right? If you become God conscious in the material world, yes, of course, you can have it. You can have it tomorrow, today. Okay, Anadir Adir Govinda. Anadir, he has no beginning. Adir, the original, he's the original. You mean somebody came before him? No. Original. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. Well, who would be the cause of all causes? God. Who else would be? You know, you've caused many things in your life. Many of them probably pretty good, and some of them not so good. Some of them you'd like to take back, I dare say. But this is the cause of all causes. Can you imagine? What a statement. Okay. Then it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, first canto, third chapter, he says, Ete Changshakala Pungsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. In the few verses before this, he goes on to, this is Shukadeva Goswami, he lists all so many avatars of Vishnu that have come into this world over the years, over the millennia. And when we say over the years, we mean over the yugas, over the epochs of time. We don't mean like since 1842. We mean like way back. So he lists, for example, Varaha, the boar incarnation, Nara Narayan Rishi, we talked about them recently when I was here. Maharaj Prithu, the great king that restored the balance and restored justice on the earth. Dhanvantari. Who's Dhanvantari? Do you know? What did he give the world? What did he bring as he emerged from the ocean of milk at the churning of the ocean by the gods and the demons in his hand? He had the nectar. Yeah. Dhanvantari is the god of what? Health. Ayurvedic medicine. Ayurveda. Sometimes I meet Western doctors and I say, yeah, well, I'm more inclined to use Ayurvedic medicine. What? What's that? I said, that's the oldest system of medicine in the world. And if they're clients of mine, then I tell them the next thing, which is it lines up exactly with Vedic astrology. You can predict all kinds of things Ayurvedically using Vedic astrology and vice versa. But if they're not clients of mine, I don't get it. I don't, it's stretching it too much. You know. So, Ete Changsha Kalapungsa, so of all these unshas, all these portions, plenary portions, empowered or partially empowered incarnations of the Godhead that I've just mentioned, he says, and I only mentioned a few here, he says, Krishnastus Bhagavan Svayam. Krishna Svayam himself is Bhagavan, is God, is the Supreme Lord. So, that's another proof. Oh, I got so many pages today, we'll never get through it. I just know. I couldn't resist. Okay, Arjuna says, where? Bhagavad Gita. What does he say about Krishna after he sees the universal form? And he says, please take it away. It's too much for me. It's scaring the daylights out of me. Please bring back your two-arm form of your sweet form as my dear friend Krishna. Please come back. So Krishna comes back and Arjuna says, you know, thinking like, boy, am I a fool. All this time I thought he was just my buddy. He was my cousin. And now he shows me this potency, this amazing energy of all creation. And all he could see in the sky was all of these manifestations of the Godhead and the demigods and all parts of creation. He couldn't see anything else. It's like the whole world as he knew it had disappeared, and in every direction that he looked, all he could see was this wonderful, wondrous form. And he said, Parabrahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. He says, you are the Supreme Spirit, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, the Supreme Abode. Abode in what sense? The Supreme Shelter. Where do you go? Who do you run to? Where do you go when you're in trouble? Where does a child go? A child goes to its mother or its father, right? Goes to someone whom the child feels loves them and will protect them. Ultimately, who is that? Who's going to protect you from death? Your wife? Your husband? Your child? The police? No. The Param Dhamma, the Supreme Abode. That's who. Does it mean you won't die? No. It means dying is, it's all dying is, really. You pop this bubble that we're in now and you appear in the next bubble. It's a different dimension, really. That's all it is. Ever see a bubble pop? Not that big a deal. Pavitram Paramambhavan, you are the supreme pure. he says. Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. You are the eternal Purusha. What's a Purusha? Person.
Like controller.
Yeah, no, person. It could be the enjoyer. Purusha means person. You are the supreme person. Purusham, Shashvatam means eternal. Divyam means what? Transcendental. Spiritual. Adi Devam. Oh, Deva means a god, right? God. What does Adi mean? We just talked about it. The original. You are the original God. You are. You're Him. Ajam, unborn, vibhum, all powerful. That's what Arjuna says after he sees universal form. What would you say? You'd say, or some such thing. That's what I'd say. This is Krishna. Now, see if I can chant this verse from my memory from 1973, because I haven't chanted it for a while. See if you can tell me where this verse comes from. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmanyasya Yatonvaya Ditarachas Charchesh Vabhigyas Farat Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye Muhyanti Yat Surayaha Te Jovari Mridangyata Vinimayo Yatra Tri Sargo Mrisha Dhamna Svena Sadani Rastakuhakam Satyam Param Dhimahi. That's it. Where does it come from? Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana. How many Puranas are there? Purana means ancient history. Nowadays they say people who don't understand what this is all about, mythologies. Oh, you mean the Indian myths, the mythologies. No, my friend. Not mythologies. Puranas means histories. Histories, what, just of our little planet? No, no. Everything, all of it. How many Puranas are there? 18 Puranas, 108 Upanishads. 18 Puranas. They're divided into three groups. 666. What are those groups governed by? Come on, my friends. I told you guys to study this at home before you came. The three modes of
passion.
Nature. Three Puranas in the mode of passion, rajas. Three in the mode of ignorance or darkness, tamas. For people in that mode. I know you don't know any of those people, but they're out there. And three in the mode of goodness, sattva. Guess which one is the highest vibration of the three? Take a wild guess. Sattva, the mode of goodness. And the highest Purana, if you could say that reasonably, I think you can. In the six Puranas in the mode of goodness is what Purana? The Bhagavat Purana, which is also called the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have that here. I think we have that for sale someplace. We have it. So that's what I'm quoting from. Which verse did I just quote? First canto, first chapter, first verse. Whoa, what an opener. What does it mean? It's a long one, so I'm just going to read the translation for you instead of dissect it. Oh, my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of, because they say Vasudevaya, Vasudev is how Krishna is referred to because he's the son of Vasudev. So by Sanskrit vridhi, the son of Vasudev becomes Vasudev. You lengthen the A, and that refers to the child. So, O my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval or original cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahma, the creator, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. That's the thing that we're all caught up in, my friends. To one degree or another, illusion. Our number one illusion is thinking that this body is the self. That's, you know, we're identifying too much with our vehicle. I drive a BMW. If you drive a BMW, great. If you identify with driving a BMW, you got a problem. We can't identify with the body. We should identify with the soul. Why? Because the body is temporary. You got to look after it, take care of it. The soul is eternal. Okay. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual. Everything appears factual here, doesn't it? Listen to this. Solid. Factual. Look at that. Solid. Must be real. Nothing illusory about that, huh? How about sex desire? You see somebody who looks so, so beautiful. Well, that must be real. Well, you know, they look beautiful now. Just give them about 20 years and see what happens. So it's all varying degrees of illusion. So I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in his transcendental abode, Paramdhamma, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. See, these are many, many proofs from Shastra to proclaim Krishna as the original person, the original Godhead. That lovely example, what sort am I looking for? In the Bhagavad Gita, where you see the tree, the banyan tree, on the bank of the river or the lake, whatever it is. And that's the reality. That's the spiritual world. And then the reflection of the tree you will see in the water. And you will see the reflection of the tree in the water in every single detail, correct, that the tree appears to have. We've all seen this reflected in still water, whatever was reflected in it. But we could point, do you see that in the water? We'd look and we'd go, oh, yeah, that's a tree. Right? Wouldn't we? We'd say, yeah, that's a tree. But it's not a tree. It's a reflection of a tree. That's what you got to remember about this world in which you are sitting. It's not the tree. It's not the spiritual world. It's only a reflection. And as much as it's so, so convincing for us, and believe me, most of us are sold on it, it's extremely convincing. It's very well done. It's like somebody painting a painting, and it looks like a photograph, right? Oh my God, that looks like a photograph. That's not a painting. No, it's a painting. I don't believe you. That's how good the photographer is. I mean, excuse me, the artist. This is how good Krishna is. I mean, check it out. Huh? He's got us all fooled. We're all fooled. He doesn't want us to remain fooled, though. He wants us to come home. Don't remain fooled. Okay. This guy Krishna, if he is who he claims to be, let's find out what he did when he was here. Remember this guy I told you sitting over there thinks he's an avatar? Let's ask him what he's done. Oh, you're an avatar. That means you're an empowered manifestation of the Godhead. Well, give me your list of, as they like to say in Christianity, give me your list of miracles. Do a miracle for me, will you? Well, what did Krishna do when he was here? Well, Krishna didn't do miracles, quote unquote. Krishna just went about his business and did what Krishna does. Most of which was pretty miraculous. So, since he was an avatar that came here to reestablish the principles of dharma, virtue, religion, and remove the demons, the dark forces, the negative forces, the people who prey on others, who manipulate others, who take advantage of others, the victimizers. Only three roles in life, my friends. Three roles available to all of us. Do you know what they are? Victim, victimizer, and victor. That's it. Nothing else available. The vast majority of the world, 95%, is victims and victimizers. You can't have a victim without a victimizer, and you can't have a victimizer without a victim. You want to read about victims and victimizers? Open the newspaper, page the pages. It's all about victims and victimizers. Correct? Well, who's the victor? That's the one you want to become. The victor victimizes no one. Nor is the victor victimized by anyone. That is the win-win. You know what we say? It's a win-win situation. What does that mean? Good for me, good for you. Everybody benefits. Nowadays, I add a third win. Win, win, win situation. And the third win goes to Mother Earth, our mother. Because if you win and I win and she loses, that often happens these days. It's no good. All right? So if you're a victim, snap out of it. Become a victor. If you're a victimizer, what are you thinking? You know, all you're doing is preying on people. You're a parasite. If you're a victimizer, you're a parasite. Sorry. Telling it like it is. We want to become victors. Okay. So Krishna was here to remove the parasites, the demons, the victimizers, these characters. And there were a lot of powerful demons in Dwapara Yuga when Krishna came. There's some very powerful ones. Even more so than now. And there's some ones that think they're pretty powerful nowadays too. With all their weaponry and such. Okay, our friend Krishna, he was attacked by many, many demons that were sent to kill him by Kamsa. King Kamsa usurped the throne from his father, Ugrasen. Ugrasen was his father, correct? Kamsa's father was not Ugrasen?
Not that.
That was his stepfather.
Demon.
Oh, okay. All right. That's right. That's why I'm asking. Okay, anyway, he usurped the throne from Ugrasen, the rightful king. And there was a prediction that the eighth child of his sister Devaki, born to his sister Devaki, would be his death, would kill him. So he put his sister and new brother-in-law in prison, as you do, right at the wedding feast, as you do. He imprisoned them, and so he could kill all the kids, kind of thing. In the meantime, he found out that Krishna had escaped, or whoever this eighth child was, had been born, you know, after all the other children were born. He escaped. He was hiding someplace in a village called Vrindavan. And so Kamsa set about sending all these big demons, who were actually shapeshifters. They could take different shapes. And, you know, they had a lot of shapeshifting going on back in those days. And they were to go one at a time. And just, well, one should be enough to kill. It's a baby. Tell you what we'll do. We'll send Putana. She will appear as a beautiful woman. She will breastfeed. It's very common to have someone else be your wet nurse and breastfeed your child for you, right? Very common. Probably less so now, but it was very common in those days. In India, I'm sure it's still pretty common. But so Putana came. She was a demoness. And she put poison on her breast. Oh, we'll kill him off right away, or we'll just feed him poison milk. Well, what happened? Krishna, the little baby, sucked the life force out of her, and she fell dead. And she had transformed herself into this beautiful woman, and then all of her ugliness returned. The ugliness, which I'm sure was hard won by all of her deeds. So that's what happened when Krishna was 1 month old. At 3 months old, he killed the demon Shakatasura, the cart demon. At 1 year old, he killed Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon. He tried to steal Krishna away as a whirlwind and, you know, go way up in the sky. He was going to dump him someplace. Let him smash on the ground, kill him. At 2 years old, he killed Vatsasura. That was a little calf, the calf, when it wasn't that little. He expanded himself when he was going to stomp on Krishna. So Krishna was 2 when he killed the calf demon. Then age 4, he killed Bakasura, crane. He was a giant bird. He was trying to punch Krishna, beat him up. Killed him. Age 5, he killed Aghasura. He was a huge serpent. He was so big that he opened his mouth and kept it open, sat just completely still. So the coward boys thought he was a cave. And they all marched into the cave, thinking, oh, it is a cave. We've never seen this here before. Let's explore. And Krishna's going, something's wrong with that cave. Anyway, he killed him. What did he do? He went inside of him and burst him, didn't he? That was age 5. He had a busy childhood, I'd say. What do you think? What did you do in your childhood? Anything like that? Do you know? Do you have any avatar friends that did any of those things? No. And then at age 6, he killed Dhenu Kasura, and that was the donkey who came to, you know, do what donkeys do, kick him with the rear legs, you know. Killed him. And then at 6 years, also killed Pralambasura. I think Balaram killed Pralamba. And that's Balaram, is Krishna's older brother. Older, not by much. How much older is he? 6 months or something?
1 year? 2 weeks.
1 year and 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks after, but he was a year old.
Okay.
So
very good. Then at age 7, he did the most famous thing he's known for. He stopped a yajna, a sacrificial ceremony that was supposed to be done for the rain god, because he was living with his foster parents, Nanda and Yashoda, in Vrindavan. They were farmers, and they did cow protection. So rain for farmers, and harvest, and planting, and harvest, etc., it's all very important. So they would do this yearly sacrifice to Indra, the god of rain. And Indra is also chief of the gods. Yeah, and Krishna says, no, you don't need to do that. Never mind Indra. Excuse me, just worship Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is the place where the cows would graze. And you can see traditionally in many cultures, in certain areas, the high hill becomes sacred. It's recognized as sacred. That's very common with the Druids. It's common in Australia with the Aboriginals, like Uluru is very sacred, Ayers Rock. But you'll see this in many, many cultures. So Govardhan Hill is a sacred hill. Krishna says Govardhan Hill is non-different than me. So what does that mean? Govardhana. Vardhana means the increase of the goat for the cows. It creates the increase or the expansion for the cows because it feeds them. Their streams coming down. And nowadays, Govardhan Hill is still there in Vrindavan, but it's much, much, much smaller than the one talked about 5,000 years ago when Krishna was here. So Indra got really angry because the sacrifice was not being performed. So he sent the Samvartaka cloud, which is the cloud you'd send at the time of devastation, when the flood would come and cover the entire earth. He sent that cloud. I thought it was overkill myself. But that's the one he sent. So down came the rains. 7 days and seven nights the rains came. So right near the beginning of that, when the cowherd men and the residents of Vrindavan became very concerned because stuff began to float away in the waters, what did Krishna do? 7 years old, he picked up Govardhan Hill. He stood underneath it in the middle. And with this finger, little finger, left hand, he held it up for 7 days and seven nights. Like an umbrella, like a brolly. That's what he did. And all of the residents of Vrindavan, including all the cows and all the animals, huddled under the hill, and they weren't even bothered. The coward men were, oh, he's going to drop it. He's going to drop it. So they put their sticks. Okay, put your stick up there. Make sure he doesn't drop it. Like your stick is going to do some. Hey, you know, we all pitch in, naturally. So that's not a bad thing. That's what Krishna did. He's very famous for that. You'll see many paintings of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. 7 years old. At 8 years old, the rasa dance with the gopis, the coward maidens. Some people think Krishna is a debaucher. And he's all about chasing the girls around. He's a womanizer. He's not. The souls in the bodies of the gopis are very high, high yogis, practitioners of yoga in former lifetimes. There are five relationships you can have with God. We've talked about it many, many times. You can be in Shantarasa, neutral. Oh God, please help me. I only pray to you, and I'm afraid this will happen or that will happen, or please make this happen. Shantarasa. Next level, Dasya, where you actually consciously serve God, do things to please God, offer things to God, like we offer food, prasad, so it becomes prasad. Spiritualized food, we offer the lamps, we offer flowers, we offer everything to God. And we encourage you to do that. So dasya, servant relationship. Then sakya, friendship. Make me your friend. Friendship is now it's equal. Equal. Yeah? Friends are equal. That's what friendship is. You know, I can say to you whatever I want, you say to me whatever you want. If we're real friends, we can do that. We can do things for each other. I can count on you, you can count on me. Right? We enjoy each other's company. Isn't that friendship? Then vatsalya is parental relationship, where you can become the parent. Look at here. Devaki and Vasudev were the parents of God. Nanda and Yashoda were the foster parents of God. So when God comes and takes an avatar, takes a form down here, and he takes myriad forms, you can't even count them all. He needs parents because he comes in the normal way. So you could be one of his parents. In which case, you're in charge, not him. He's the kid. You're in charge. He's the vats. The vats is the child. And then the highest is madhurya, is conjugal rasa. Lovers. As soon as we think of lovers, we have a tendency to cast a dark tinge on it based on our experience in the material world. Krishna's dance, the rasa dance with the gopis, took place at the age of 8. He was 8 years old. This was an intimate exchange, but it wasn't like people try to make it out to be, like some kind of dark sexual fantasy. Some people try to project that on Krishna. It's not like that at all. And the prayer of these souls in the bodies, the gopis, was that they could become the lovers of God directly in another lifetime. So that prayer was being realized, but in a very positive and pure atmosphere. That's what you need to understand about that. At 12 years old, Kansa, having sent all these demons, I don't think I mentioned all of them, and all of them failed in killing Krishna. So, okay, what are we going to do now? We're going to have a big wrestling tournament, and we're going to send Akrura, his uncle, to Vrindavan to get these boys, Krishna and Balaram, get the two of them. We got to get rid of both these guys, to come and wrestle in the big tournament in the city. They lived in the village. These were village boys. But now they're going to the big city, Mathura. So, you know, but it's exciting stuff. The gopis were heartbroken. They were absolutely shattered that Krishna and Balaram were going off in the chariot with Akrura. And they, of course, they said, no, we'll be back. We'll be back. Don't worry, we'll be back. Krishna never came back for the rest of his life. Never came back. Balaram came once, I think. Krishna never came back. Anyway, the boys are 12 years old. They're invited to fight professional wrestlers, fully grown men. They've been wrestling for years, and that's who they're going to fight in a tournament. But even as they enter the place of the tournament, they send an elephant to crush them with his gigantic legs. Never mind the tournament, let's crush them first. Get them out of the way ahead of time. Kuvalayapida. Did that work? No. Didn't work. Krishna was very excited to go to the tournament because he knew that now he would do what the prophecy had said. He would kill Kansa, who had usurped the throne and who was a big demon and was creating different problems for different people, particularly Krishna. So they, Krishna and Balaram, finished off the wrestlers, needless to say. And then Krishna went up and on the dais, grabbed Kamsa and finished him off. So that was 12, up to 12. That's what God does. I mean, just kill? No. Not just kill. But those are the things he had to deal with because these demons were sent. So he had to deal with that. Once he was accused of eating dirt by his friends. Krishna's eating dirt. How many times have you heard that one? when you have little kids around, or when you were a little kid. Didn't you eat dirt? I ate dirt. You didn't once, huh? Well, see, I would have been the guy who got into trouble then. At least I tried it once. Well, my neighbor girl, she made me, I made you pies. You have to taste one. I said, but your pies are made of mud. All this work and you're not even going to try one of my pies? You know how it is. It's still the same today. But this one was made of mud. Okay, I'll try one. No, that actually happened. So, they said Krishna had eaten some dirt. And he showed up. Come here, Krishna. Let me see. Did you eat some dirt? No. Oh, no, no. No, I didn't. Open your mouth. I want to see. Nah. He opens his mouth wide. Krishna's looking in his mouth. All of a sudden, the entire creation, all the planets, all the worlds, the galaxies, everything is appears in his mouth. And Krishna goes, never mind, never mind. Okay, just go away and play. It's too much. So, I mean, he did a lot of things like that, too. Okay. Let's run down a few things here. Krishna was appeared on Earth some 5,200 years ago. He was born in the Yadu dynasty. He was born in the city of Mathura, but was removed to Vrindavan under cover of night by his father, Vasudev. So, and he was placed with Yashoda, who had just had a baby, and her baby, female, was taken in exchange, and her female baby was Yogamaya. That was the divine plan. So when she woke up, she had a son. Yeah, there it was. Krishna accepted 16,108 wives. 16,108 wives. What? Yeah. Why? Well, having more than one wife was very common in those days. Krishna legitimately had 8 wives. I won't go into all the stories of how he got those wives, but he had the major 8. And we have to remember, he's God. It's important to remember that. Now, I mean, there are many cultures historically that have, people have had several wives. Generally kings or people who could afford them. There was a demon named Narakasura. Yeah, Narakasura. Narakasura, he had killed 16,000 princes in battle and or had kidnapped 16,000 princesses. Uh, and he put them all in his prison. The men he killed and maidens he kept. And once the culture back then was, if you are captured as a woman and taken to the house of another man, you're as good as contaminated, whether he touches you or not. Meaning what? Meaning some other man, you slept in the house of another man, so, you know, you're his, whether he touched you or not, or whether you let him. It's no one else is going to marry you. Bottom line. This is the bottom line. They're not going to be able to marry these girls off to anybody because no one will take them. That's a fact. Even today in India, this exists to some extent. So it's not easy to marry somebody. If a girl today, what I mean by that today is, supposing a girl in India gets married to somebody and then that guy decides he doesn't want to be married anymore or have a divorce and that's it. Now, try to marry her off to another person. This is what I'm talking about. It's very, very difficult. In fact, we had a Prabhu here, one of the male devotees here, was involved in a situation like that, where the girl was a very sincere devotee of Krishna from birth. She got married to an Indian devotee, and they were married for a short time, and then he decided, I don't want to be a devotee anymore, I just want to, you know, have a material life and material experience. I don't want to be at going to the temple, etc. And so therefore she went back to her parents' house, and who would marry her? Very hard to find. This devotee here not here in Inishrat, he married her. So, anyway. So Krishna took these 16,000 women and he married them. And he saved their chastity. He saved their reputation. And he legitimized them as his wives. Now, here's Krishna with 16,108 some wives. Now we'll show whether or not he's God. Because anybody who's got more than one wife knows. There's always a favorite, and there's always one that feels she's not the favorite. And if you can manage all that, my friend, God bless you. Because that's not easy to do. So how did Krishna manage all that? Well, we could say Krishna's a bigamist. He had all these wives. Actually, the average person, if he had all those wives, he would be a bigamist. He would be committing bigamy, multiple marriage. Krishna was a monogamist, not a bigamist. Well, how could he be monogamist if he's got all these wives? Krishna expanded himself in 16,108 forms. So he himself was with each and every wife in her own palace that he had built for her.
At the same time.
At the same time. Simultaneously with each of them. That's where he'd be, indoors, in the palaces, with each wife who had his full attention. Then, in the morning, when it was time to come outside and do business and go about the town of Dwarka, etc., he would amalgamate himself into one person, and off he'd go. So if you can practice bigamy like monogamy, then you too may be an avatar. But if you can't, anyway, the way you got to look at it is Krishna saved the reputation of these ladies. He wasn't out there roaming around looking for girls. He was protecting their virtue. And one of the main things Krishna did while he was here, I guess I lost track of the time, did I? Sorry. He helped the Pandavas, the five Pandava brothers, get their kingdom back, right? Didn't he? Because they had lost their kingdom due to crooked gambling match with the Kauravas. Okay. So, Krishna is wonderful. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna will reciprocate with you very wonderfully and very quickly. This I know. If you take a couple of steps toward Krishna, he'll take many, many, many steps toward you. So we chant Krishna's names here. We take Krishna prasad, food, vegetarian food that we cook and offer to Krishna on the altar. You can cook and vegetarian food at your home and offer it also to Krishna, either in your mind, in meditation, or if you have an altar, you get a special plate that is only Krishna's plate. No one eats off it. Just Krishna. And you place your little... You don't have to place the whole pot of food. You just take a little bit from each pot, you put it on the little plate, and you present it, and you chant some. Chant Hare Krishna, or some further prayers if you know them. And that becomes spiritual food. We said earlier, it all begins with the tongue. So you're engaging your tongue in the chanting, very purifying. You're engaging your tongue in eating prasadam, spiritual food offered to Krishna. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. Sorry, I went over. Any questions?
I had some, I don't know how to say remarks. Sorry, my bad English.
That's okay. Mine's not that good either.
You said that this material world is shadow or reflection of the spiritual world. Shlok Prabhupada says it in his book. I don't know if I remember in his book. I don't know how to translate it in English.
It's okay.
On creation, is a Krivanyastra, it's like a science of self-realization, something like that. Or in some purport on some verse, he said that this material world is real, but manifestation is temporary.
Yeah, it's real. It's not unreal. We're all here. But it's illusion in its function. It's illusion because we identify with it. And it's illusory because it's temporary.
And one more thing I want to ask you. I also heard or read, I'm not sure anymore, when Krishna get up this hill, Govardhan, his little finger. Is this true that he threw away Sudarshana disc so that rain from outside cannot go inside?
I never heard that.
Sudarshana,
I don't know.
Disc was floating so fast that neither the one drop cannot go inside.
I've never heard that before. Have you?
No,
but it could be true.
Could be true. Sure, sounds reasonable. That Sudarshan disc is a multifunctional tool. You know, it cut off a lot of heads, but it's actually, its function is enlightenment.
And one more thing regarding to these three groups, like victimizers, victors.
Which one are you?
I think that only victims are persons who are not controlling his mind. We are victims of our uncontrolled mind. And we think that we have enemies. I don't know, maybe because of bad karma we really had enemies.
Well, a lot of times you become a victim because you have bad karma.
Yes.
Correct.
But when we change our spiritual consciousness, then we can rise above this.
Exactly. Exactly. We are given free will. This free will is a powerful thing. Some people think everything's just going to fall on your head and there's nothing you can do about it. Oh, no, no, my friends. You're supposed to be able to do something about it. We call that evolution.
Spiritual
evolution. Evolution of consciousness. And old habits, bad habits, old patterns, negative patterns, you being victimized, whatever. You need to lift yourself out of that stuff. You can say, yeah, but the government did this to me, and then this person did this to me, and that person did that. Well, aren't you tired of it? Let's change it. Don't just sit there and lick your wounds. Let's change it. That's what you're free to do. That's a choice. It's a choice. All right? Jai Prabhu, thank you very much. Okay? We're going to have some chanting and then some prasadam. Haribol.